Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Show. I'm Wes Fenland, features editor, and I'm here with another GDC edition of the podcast, and we have the guys from Subset Games with us, and special guest Chris Avalone here to talk about Into the Breach. Justin and Matt, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, yeah. This is Justin here. Nice to meet you all.
Yeah, it's going well.
So Justin and Matt are here, and we have Chris Avalone on Skype with us. How are you doing today, Chris?
Great, Wes. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's the fourth day of GDC, so a little frazzled, but not hungover. So I'm going to consider that a win.
Accomplishments.
So yeah, you guys, like I said, are here to talk about Into the Breach, which came out. Has it been a month yet? A month and a half ago?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. Yeah. Somehow it feels longer for me. It feels like that game has been in the world now for months, but I think that's just because of the density of conversation around it and how many people on my Twitter feed and Steam friends list have been playing it. How has it been for you guys? Has it been kind of a whirlwind?
Yeah, it burned pretty hot at the beginning there. It was the initial response has been extremely positive, and so... I mean, granted, we were down in the ditches trying to fix problems post-launch, but all in all, just the response of fans has been amazing.
Was that sort of what you expected? You know, I remember you talking a little bit about, before the game came out, of having to sort of deal with the idea of making a follow-up to FTL, which a few people liked.
I don't think that we were expecting the response that we got. I still think it's kind of a smaller game, like a more niche game that doesn't really fit the FTL mold, and it's nice to see that that's actually resonated with people, but we weren't necessarily expecting it to have quite the same appeal.
Yeah, they're very different games, so I kind of was a little bit surprised that we didn't get more responses that were like, I liked FTL, but I don't like this. Mm. I mean, there's certainly people who are like, I liked FTL more, but this is cool, but all in all, the sort of crossover surprised me.
Nice. So I'd love to kind of dig in a little bit to, you know, the process of making the game the last couple years. But why don't we start with how Chris ended up getting involved in this project and, you know, kind of what your working relationship was like together as a team.
Chris, you want to go over the initial connection FTL times?
Yeah, actually, so I met the core writer for FTL in a pub in London, and I didn't know he was working on FTL, but we were drinking a lot, and eventually he had to put down his beer glass, and because he's like, you know what, I have to go finish up the manual for this game I'm working on, and, you know, of course, because I ask questions, I'm like, well, Tom, what game are you working on? It's so important you have to put down your beer, and he's like, well, I work on this game called FTL. You know, it's like, and then every sound in the pub, it felt like it all just went away, and I'm like, you're working on FTL, which, you know, I put about, you know, 80 hours into it, and I loved it, and I'm like, man, I would work on that game for free, and it wasn't the beer talking, like, that was genuinely how I felt the next morning, too. So Matthew and Justin dropped me an email, basically along the lines of, well, you know, are you serious? And I'm like, I'd run that game for free, and then we just they're like, well, we have an advanced edition coming up, so if you want to do some of the encounter design for that, we have a few encounters we can throw your way. And I was like, sure. And then that was working on the advanced edition, and then Justin and Matthew, they dropped me a line saying, hey, working on something new, and I think my answer was basically yes, I'd love to, before they even told me what it was, just because I had a really good, you know, experience working with them the first time. I had a lot of fun. So I'm like, okay, whatever you guys are doing, I'm there.
And what did Chris say when you told him it was a mech versus kaiju game, or is that how it played out?
God, it's been so long ago, I don't even remember what the initial
conversation was. Yeah, I think initially it was just like, whatever you say, like, whatever type of game, yeah, I'm in on it. Once we started talking about the specifics, we sort of weren't entirely sure, especially early on, how much, you know, narrative we wanted. For a long time, the game had, like, text events and stuff like that, but which were eventually dropped. So it shifted a lot over the time, and when we initially brought him on, you know, we were trying to, we had a framework for the way we wanted the world to work and the sort of general story setting, but other than that, we sort of wanted to just give him free rein to have fun, with, depending on how much time he had, since he's a very busy guy.
And we're very grateful that he was willing to put up with our nonsense, as we didn't really know what we were doing, and it took so long for the game to solidify, and to really know where the narrative was going to be and where the requirements were going to lay for it.
Well, if we're going to trade who should be thankful to who, I'm thankful for you guys putting up with all the UI iterations and the how should this word exactly be formatted to communicate this challenge. And Matthew is also very, very patient with handling all the scripting token requests and the pilot via the pilot barks, basically. So, Matthew, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
So I'd love to dig a little bit into both the UI and the writing process. But I'm going to start with writing a little bit, because, you know, I think, Chris, most PC gamer readers, PC game players associate your name with really, really long RPGs with, you know, just Bible levels of dialogue, right? You know, characters that just can talk and talk and talk. And Into the Breach is definitely not, you know, a 100-hour RPG that's, you know, written out to the length of a novel. It's a game with very tight amount, you know, delivery of text and not a whole lot of text in the game, at least at any one time. So what was it like for you, you know, doing the writing for this game and kind of paring that down to the essentials?
Well, this may surprise you, but actually that's one reason I got excited about working on FTL, because I felt that a great amount of information was being communicated in a very brief manner, which actually, so the amount of writing that gets done in RPGs isn't always up to me. And I guess what I liked about both FTL and Into the Breach is you have to communicate, well, you don't have to. You set up a much larger story and a much larger aesthetic, but the brevity of the lines, the way it gets communicated, the amount that the player sees is actually very minimal, and that's always an interesting challenge. And oftentimes, it's much more fun than doing, well, you know, the publisher mandates you do this exposition because no one will understand what's going on because players are stupid, and then you argue back and go, well, I really don't think players are stupid. I think they'll get this, but okay, but if I want to get paid for my milestone, I'm going to do it.
Can you guys talk a little bit about what you mentioned a second ago, Justin, about there were some like text sequences in the game that you ended up dropping?
Well, the game shifted dramatically in a lot of different ways. Early on, we were more inspired by something like XCOM and having some sort of city management aspect and that sort of thing. In general, this game took a lot longer to figure out what the game would actually be. Maybe about 2.5 years before we actually settled in, okay, here's the game scope, and now let's make it. So during that time period, there was just a lot of fumbling around.
We'd throw anything at the wall just to see what would stick.
To see how it worked.
And given what happened with FTL, of course, experimenting with text events was going to be something we'd at least dip into to see if it would really fit. And we couldn't really make it work in a way that felt natural in the same way that FTL did.
Yeah, we learned a lot of lessons from what was enjoyable about having, you know, options and blue choice options and contextual things. And so we, you know, wanted to try and expand on that idea in interesting ways. But it didn't fit with the core gameplay loop that we found was most interesting. And yeah, we must have cut maybe like over a year, year and a half worth of like work, like over the development of the game.
We did at least like 2 games worth of design coming up with, which includes all the other the narrative ideas and the stuff that came into it beforehand.
Yeah, it makes it hard to then know exactly how you want your narrative scope to work. We definitely had, like with FTL, we're a bigger fan of having a really coherent world and universe and little small stories within it that sort of expand and allow people to sort of see more interesting subtle details without having a lot of direct exposition and you know, text you have to click through if you're not into that sort of thing. So plus in the world is obviously incredibly important, but very often I feel like the things that stick most with the player are their own personal stories within the game, like in FTL, like what happened to this specific crew. So in that way, all the story that we end up making is basically playing a backseat role to the player's own experience. So you want to make sure that it can facilitate really interesting stories, but doesn't get in the way of the stories that players want to have.
It's just window dressing for them to be able to play around in it, basically.
Yeah, but of course, for those people who really do care, you want to be able to be consistent and have really interesting small stories for them to find and be intrigued about and wonder what are the relationship between these races.
Or characters, like Into the Breach has a lot of the pilot characters,
yeah.
People they want to interact with and be on a team with and care about. And so that kind of, those narrative pieces are important, while it's not necessarily the same linear narrative in the traditional sense.
To the point of kind of retaining some mystery for players and letting them tell their own stories, I think, Chris, you did an interview with our friends at Rock, Paper, Shotgun recently and talked a little bit about the sort of different theories for what's going on with the timelines in the game and what happens when you reset, and mentioned like the Vec are, I guess, never outright referred to as aliens in the game. Can
mm-hmm.
you talk a little bit about, you know, in your writing for the game and working with Justin and Matt, like finding the balance of what you wanted to make explicit versus, you know, implicit or not even, you know, mentioned at all?
Yeah, actually, Justin and Matthew and I had a lot of conversations about the, you know, what technically is going on behind the scenes. And we all made very conscious decisions about what we would expose to the players and what we wouldn't. And I think they were I think they were all good ones. The danger you have with sometimes going into too much detail about something is actually it can undermine the experience. And I don't think anything that we sort of left off stage was something that would have added to the gameplay experience, because ultimately it's the gameplay loop that's important, and providing the cool narrative and aesthetic context for that I think really makes it shine. So we did have discussions about that, and it's but yeah, every pilot has their own perspective based on that interview.
A specific point, for example, All You Need Is Kill, the book that became that movie that I forgot,
the Tom Cruise movie, Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah,
in that book, like, I was just loving the sort of mystery of what was going on, and then they just literally explained exactly what was going on, and suddenly I just stopped caring. It's just like, I no longer care.
Yeah.
Like, with FTL, we definitely had, with Tom, a lot of, like, cool backstories for, like, how the races interacted, like, how the Federation fell apart, and nothing was explicitly canon, but once you take those ideas and then consistently use them in the game for the small events, you can sort of get an atmosphere of something's going on here without needing to tell you a 5-minute thing about what happened to the Federation before this. You know, it's not necessary to the game, but it's kind of, I feel like people intuit it.
Yeah, it's why we do the background work. Chris did a lot of really cool background work that kind of dove into different reasons why the world might be the way it is and what's going on.
Yeah, the islands, the corporations.
And even with all of that not necessarily being really what's happening, I don't know if we really have a final answer on all of it, but having that as reference points when you're kind of writing the rest of it is really what gives it the more than just a really shallow feeling. Yeah.
As a player, I'm always torn between, like, recognizing that keep retaining some of that mystery and focusing on, you know, a single story is really the better way to go, or that, you know, the story that you end up telling the game. On the other hand, I'm like, I really want to just read the whole story Bible. You know, like, I was a huge Halo fan back in the day, and it was just like Bungie would occasionally reference, you know, the story Bible, and we have, you know, 1,000 pages of all this stuff. I'm just like, oh, I just want to read it. Just publish that whole book so I can just go through it.
Yeah, sometimes it's better not to get what you want.
I know, and that's hard to recognize. but sage words. So speaking of the canon, what was sort of the canon for you guys in terms of, like, kaiju stuff that was, you know, inspiration for this game? Or, like, were you guys, you know, any of you big fans of Japanese monster movies and mecha stuff, you know, Gundam, or did you just sort of fall into making, you know, a mech versus kaiju game?
We're maybe not the biggest fans of certain things, but when growing up, I adored Evangelion, and I watched a number of other animes, of which I don't even remember the names, so they must have not had an impact on me. I love things like Front Mission, and, for example, not to go on the record too hard on this, but, like, I really didn't like Pacific Rim. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying, for me, I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. I don't think that we drew specifically, like, directly from a single sources for this sort of inspiration. It's more just, like, the concept of giant mechs fighting giant monsters is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, like, Matt, I know you came more from, like, a mech warrior.
Yeah, I prefer the more, like, the mech warrior route of the mech stuff. But it is, at the end of the day, giant robots are cool. And it's, even if I don't love most of the media that involves them, it's hard to deny that there's a core idea there that works. I think Chris was a big Evangelion fan as well, weren't you, Chris?
Yeah, and actually, you know what Justin was saying about Pacific Rim is, so I made the mistake in one meeting to say, oh, so kind of like Pacific Rim, and things went kind of quiet. I'm like, Pacific Rim is like not on the narrative influence side. Got it. Okay. I enjoy Pacific Rim a lot. I like Del Toro just in general, but yeah, that was definitely part of the no pillars for the game.
To be fair, Justin
this
is more anti Pacific Rim than I
just
am.
Me.
Though it's
this
not
is,
my favorite film.
This is not Subset Games. This is official statement. No, but seriously, you have two guys who are hooked up. Their brains are connected to be able to control different parts of the body. Like, why do you need to do that? And then they have to reach to hit a button. you're connected mentally to this thing.
Well, it's a lot like how Subset Games work. I mean, you and Matthew, that's how you coordinate, just the whole process of making a game, right?
It's very true. We're not particularly great at conveying the sort of underlying agreements that we have.
You're two brains, but you still have to press buttons all the time.
All the time. It's really a pain.
Sad comparison, I mean.
Cool. So moving on, I want to jump into the UI a little bit, which is, I think, one of the most roundly praised parts of the game, because I think most people who play it recognize the density of information that has to be conveyed in this game, the way you designed it to give you almost absolute information at any time. And I definitely realize why, while playing, that the game makes it pretty easy, like almost effortless, to get that information. And anything that's that easy and understandable is extremely hard to make, I think. So can you talk about the iteration of the design? It sounded like, Chris, you had some involvement in kind of figuring out the right word choices, or maybe where that stuff would go on the screen, that kind of thing.
Well, actually, Matthew was the one who reminded me that when in doubt, be clear. That sounds like a strange principle to say, but like, don't make up sci-fi terms that are one definition removed from what you want. Like, if a device is a teleporter, call it a teleporter. Like, if something freezes something, use frozen. Use things that are just clear. And that's the overriding rule of the day. Because sometimes you can get lost in the, you know, well, I want to put this sci-fi wordage layer over everything. Just don't do it. Like, be clear.
We made a lot of sacrifices in everything from the text to the visuals to the game design in the effort to make it clear. Clarity of design was a key tenet for the game from the beginning. And you're right, it was incredibly hard to do. I think we've mentioned before that I don't think any of us consider ourselves particularly talented UI designers. It's not something that comes naturally to us. It was something that we kind of brute forced into existence over 4 long years of development to really get it to be the place that we needed it to be.
You
know, one other thing with that is also the QA testers were also very good about calling out things that they wanted to know. And then I thought you guys were really quick about addressing those concerns visually in the UI and with text to go, okay, well, that information is obviously important. Here's how we can do it. And then by going through all those requests, I think that really helped make the UI shine too.
For sure. We couldn't have done any of it without the testers that we had in all forms or all times during the development. We would mostly make a terrible UI, put it in front of someone, see why it was terrible, and then go back and fix it. And it was just doing that over and over and over of how we got to where we were.
Yeah, but like what Matt was saying, things that we would discover, like the fact that we would need some sort of projection lines for artillery, which didn't exist initially, then heavily constrain what we can do with the game design. You need to have things that are consistent and clear, so you don't have to be concerned about each individual weapon having sort of different arc lines and that sort of thing. So that's why, for example, artilleries can only fire in cardinal directions or whatever. It was a requirement of the UI, essentially. So
did you at some point, you know, find that frustrating or limiting and have that turn into its own reward? You know, like it seems like you were kind of building inside a box, but a lot of times that's when you can come up with the most creative applications of, you know, of a weapon, for instance, with artillery, something that you may not have thought to do at first because it's like, oh, we can fire, you know, in 360 degrees any direction we want. And then all of a sudden when you're limited, you're like, well, now I have to really focus to come up with a cool application of this.
I don't know about Matt, but I feel like it's much easier to design with heavy constraints in anything. Like it's, you know, having a blank page is impossible to start drawing, you know. So having, once you set those boundaries, it's much easier to be like, all right, here's what we can do within that and see if that's fun. When you don't have those boundaries, it feels really sort of loosey-goosey.
It's kind of like just coloring in the lines at that point. Like you've got your framework in and now you just need to fill in all the spaces and kind of explore every corner that you can within that block.
Yeah.
And it's much less intimidating once you have that block.
Yeah, once Hearthstone set their words for, you know, death rattle, like, okay, then now what can we do with this framework that is consistent with this text or this system? And so I feel like it's a lot easier to design within constraints.
So kind of branching off the UI, one of the things that conveys extremely well is, you know, what the VEC are going to do in a given turn, you know, what order things are going to happen and so on. But one of the things I wondered, you know, while playing the game is what determines what they do on their next turn, you know, why do they target a mech versus a city? How do they determine which unit goes after what unit? Does that vary at all based on the difficulty? You know, will they tend to gang up on cities more than mechs, the harder difficulty you set? Or like what drives what the AI targets and how they make decisions?
It's a pretty rudimentary AI system that's just based on, they look at all their possible targets, pull up a list, and kind of randomly select from within that. The difficulty system does not influence what they target. With FTL, we did play with stuff like enemy ships are more likely to hit player systems instead of empty rooms on higher difficulties, and we considered doing that with this, but from balance testing, it felt good on all difficulties without needing to have that additional push. The enemy does not play optimally, as you would guess just by playing the game. You can tell they don't play optimally. It's super important for the game to work that they don't just completely screw you over. There's a lot of constraints that are put on that we found the game, in order to be fun, had to always feel like the player had a chance to stop things. And there are a lot of situations that the AI could make that are just unfair feeling. Like, it's the right move from the AI's perspective, but from a player's perspective, they can't react to it, and if they can't react, they're not having fun. And so most of the AI work involved teaching the AI to always make moves that left choices open for players, and keeping them away from things that would just frustrate.
At what point in the design process did you get to the spot where I feel like the game kind of ended up where most turns were you sitting there just being like, fuck, what do I do? Like, how am I going to get out of this? Just being like, it just being agonizing. Like, how long did it get to that point? And when it got there, were you like, yes, this is it?
I feel like, I mean, we can only really design for ourselves. It's extremely hard for me to picture what it would be like to not understand what push is and then see how hard the game is. And we don't do an extensive amount of user testing or something. So I feel like over time, we just gradually increase the difficulty to match our understanding of the game. So, like, I just, you know, because I'm testing it all the time and I want to have fun. And so I keep making it harder and harder until, just to keep pace with my own knowledge of the game. And I never had that much of that situation that you're describing. So it's interesting to see post-release the sort of, I've spent 15 minutes on every single turn and this game took 6 hours. And, like, that experience is a little bit new to me, so it's cool to see. But
yeah, I've watched streamers spend like 10 minutes on a turn and yeah. And they come up with a solution and it works and it's super cool. I'm not that patient a player when I play the game. I'll do a non-optimal solution before I do that. It is interesting to see everyone's different approach.
What about you, Chris? Did you have kind of as much time playing the game as it evolved as they did, or did you, you know, were you mostly focusing on the writing?
I put in about 230 hours on the game, and I will say it was very, very hard to test narrative bugs in the game because I'd get lost in playing it, which was a very good thing. But yeah, no, I had a blast playing it, and I guess I'm like Matthew and Justin, and I'm not really that patient with turns, so usually if it takes me more than 2 minutes, I just act and then trust on a reset turn to save my hide. But I'm also not a very good game player in general, but that probably accounts for the 230 hours of continually playing it. But yeah, beyond that, not much else.
With writing the game, kind of setting the tone for this world, for the encounters as well as the characters that you interact with, I feel like, and this kind of extends to the music as well, when you win, you get a sense of relief, but you never get the sense of, like, it's the end of Star Wars and you know there's like a fanfare going off and the characters get, you know, medals put on them and everybody's celebrating. It's kind of just like, woo, I made it through another one, like maybe I'm gonna survive. Can you talk about kind of setting the tone for the game? You know, was that a kind of explicit direction? How much of that came from you, Chris, versus Matt and Justin?
I feel like the overall tone was determined based on our experience with FTL, and we wanted people to their game experience and the story experience to sort of mirror what the actual player experience is, which is to, you know, in FTL you play in this suicide mission that is, you know, as your one shot, but meanwhile the player is playing the game like 10 times in a row, failing, trying again. So we wanted to sort of mirror that style and in the actual storytelling, and that sort of gradually led to that type of ending of not overly satisfactory, because you're not really expected to stop. It's not like, okay, you beat it, game's over. What do you think, Chris?
I think that there's the overall feel, the war is always continuing, but there are relief moments that we did try and add at the end. And Matthew was very nice about helping me script those moments up. But, like, you know, the options for the pilots to say goodbye to each other and the timeline, and then the fact that scripting was also added so that when you take that particular pilot from those final battles into other timelines, like their introductory speech changes. So you do have this sense of not only the gameplay wins from, like, storing their experiences and, you know, being able to build new squads, but also you get a little bit of a narrative reward too at the end. But the war does keep going.
Yeah, that final tone for the very end of the game is interesting in that I feel like it was we never really explicitly talked about it, but everyone kind of arrived at the same place. Like, I remember talking to Ben, the composer, about his final, the credits track that he made, and if he wanted to do a fanfare or whatnot, and he felt that this way fit, like, from his, that's what he brought to the table and said, this is what I think it should be. The audio guys, Chris, we all kind of seemed to be on a similar page, and it just was very organic, and that this is what felt right for the game.
That's cool. Do you have any sort of like data gathering on the back end where you can see like win rates for different squads or kind of the most picked mechs, anything like that?
We don't have anything.
Yeah, we don't do any data.
It's always, when you're one man with a small team, it's and I'm the only programmer on the team. everything is that one more amount of work, one more feature to add, one more thing to do. And so we're very bare bones in what we actually end up. It's hard enough making a game without also having all that kind of back end stuff.
And also other designers are a little bit more, some designers are a little bit more numbers focused than we are. Like, we don't do balance measuring based on spreadsheets or whatever. We do it just by playing it and tweaking it, playing and tweaking it. So even if I had tons of data on who people prefer, I wouldn't even know, like, what to learn from that.
It'd be interesting. But I don't think we'd use it as much. And though it is fun that since we did Steam achievements for End of the Breach, we do get the statistics on percentages for the computer.
How many people get each achievement?
Yeah, which is, that's a fun one to see. Mm. And like we know, or I guess this is a couple weeks out of date, but at the time, about a week and a half ago, we have 3% of players have beaten it on hard.
Mm. It's not real high.
Which is not real high. And it's funny because you see a lot of complaints about the game being too easy. And I'm not really sure what's going on with that in terms of the percentages for competing on hard versus those that are complaining.
I think the people who probably beat on hard, they're the types of, like, the way their brains worked sort of makes this game more approachable to them. Whereas for a lot of people, you have to unlearn tendencies or relearn new things. Like, if you have this sort of, like, I play chess puzzles sort of mind, I could imagine it being much easier to pick up from the start and therefore approach hard quicker. And so from their perspective, it's too easy, but it's just the game can appeal to a much wider breadth of skill levels, I feel, than maybe FTL could. So it'd be really hard to accommodate all, like, personal skill, I feel.
I'd love to go one by one to each of you and have you tell me your favorite squad or your favorite, you know, custom combination of mechs, either just generally that you used a lot or maybe that you have one particularly memorable run where, you know, it just went really, really well with a dynamite combo.
From the core set, I like the Zenith Guard with the laser mech the most, which is a not particularly popular opinion from what I can tell from the fan base. But I also really enjoyed from a custom play, really close to release, I finished a game with just using three of the little floaty science-y, I think it's defense mech was the final name in the game, one that pulls a unit or makes a shield. He's part of the Zenith Guard. And just three of those, which is a combination we would have never put in the game intentionally or planned around, but it was just a squad entirely about mitigating damage and never killing anything, and it was oddly satisfying to get through the game like that.
I love setting up chains in Blitzkrieg, but especially, you know, using the rock to be able to make small bridges and stuff like that. But I think maybe my favorite squad is the Frozen Titans, and not for the reasons that I see a lot of people just want to use the pilot that prevents the self-freezing effect on the ice mech, but I love using that downside of the weapon as a tool, because you can use it to block emerging vec, you can use it to have the mech be a wall to bounce into. And there's a lot of, it encourages some bizarre plays that you wouldn't do otherwise. And I really like that sort of forcing you to think outside the box. There's a lot of weird, random, or custom squads that I have tried, but I can't think of anything offhand that, like, particularly stood out.
It is funny, the pilot that you start with a shield, and so that negates that self-freezing. And everyone seems to be really into that.
Also the anti-web, I think. That blocks ice too, I think.
Does it block
ice? I love that you're just bringing up new combinations.
But regardless, like,
it's changed so many times. Sometimes you forget where it is.
And players get really excited by that, and then they exploit it so they can do really high score runs or whatnot. And it's fun to see, like, we left that stuff in the game intentionally because we wanted players to have those moments of discovery and to enjoy weird combinations that are either harder or easier. But I didn't consider the fact that, yeah, one of my favorite designs is that mech and how it you have to play in interesting ways. And when you just put in that pilot, sure, it's strong, but it's just less interesting. It's just the players hurting themselves just from you're not experiencing more interesting design, which is a funny
And though I would feel bad to, like, restrict that feature and say no, that's too OP, because it's also fun to be OP.
Yeah.
So
there's nothing wrong with it being OP. It's just it's also fun to not do that.
Chris, what about you?
I had two favorite squads. One was Flame Behemoths, because I like setting fire to stuff, but because that one particular swap mech could make some really satisfying setups for destroying the enemy, like whenever I was able to teleport an enemy into the wake of another one, that was so satisfying. And you know, for such a, I took it for granted at first when I was playing them, but once you really upgrade its range, like that swap mech is just crazy nuts fun to play. I also really like the Rusting Hulks because they taught me exactly how effective smoke is, and whenever I do a custom squad, I usually, and this is how I beat the game on hard, is I took three of those Rusting Hulk artillery mechs, the one that sort of farts out the smoke and then does the also the missile blast, and when I had three of those, I just cloaked the board in smoke and just blow up everything, and that was a lot of fun, but I felt like I was choosing it.
So you're all part of that 3% that's beating the game on hard?
Oh, yeah. I could be on hard.
We've beaten
time.
It countless times, which is a separation than FTL.
Chris maybe hasn't beaten it countless times.
I have a theory on that, because I noticed that, you know, during one of our calls, Matthew asked, like, he asked me if I was actually, well, maybe it was just e-chat or whatever, but he asked me if I usually didn't play on hard, and I'm like, well, no, because I want to get all the other achievements as easily as possible, and the only time I really would want to play on hard after that is to get the hard achievement, and then I'd probably play the game normally, and then I felt, wow, maybe I'm just playing for the achievements.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I will still play it on easy sometimes just because it's fun. It's a very different experience, but I mean, I had the test to make sure you could get every single achievement on hard, and so, you know, and we've been playing the game for 4 years.
Yeah.
Have people already come up with really creative stuff that you hadn't even thought about that you've seen out there?
I mean, I keep finding, even when I play, there's some weird combo of interactions that I didn't expect, or I do some sort of random squad or try and make a custom squad that plays completely differently than I expected. So there's always lots of little small stuff that people do. I look forward to seeing if anyone sort of digs into the scripting and makes their own weird weapons, because, like, the style of game that we have where it's these low numbers and low damage, like, yeah, that works, but you probably could just have, like, way more enemies and way more damaging things, and it would also be a balanced, interesting game, and I'm too lazy to make two or three games, but maybe someone else can.
And there's a lot of weapons that would be really fun that don't fit our requirements in terms of clarity and balance to the rest of the game. And so that's kind of the fun thing about modders, and why we wanted this game to be slightly more open for modders, is that they're not as constrained. They get to do the wacky, crazy stuff that's really cool to play around with, but we wouldn't want to put into a final, like, complete package as,
like,
a game.
I don't know if you saw it, but the wind weapon, it was just on that cusp of, like, this is wacky. It probably shouldn't be in the game, but it's just too fun. Which is, if you don't know it, it pushes every single tile in a specific direction.
Every single unit on the board
and
gets pushed.
It's maybe the most powerful thing in the game, because you could line them up, and, like, if there's a row of six enemies, you now do two damage to every single enemy because they all bump into each other.
That was a combo that I saw players use that I had not thought of before. It was the pilot that can shoot twice, and that weapon.
And the wind.
Because he doesn't have to move to use
that
weapon.
I didn't
so he
think
can
about
just
that.
Blow everything all over the map.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to try this one now. This is how I'm gonna beat the game on hard.
Yeah, unfortunately, you have to find that weapon. I can't start with that one, but yeah.
Yeah, so there's a few secrets in the game, you know, almost like Spelunky style, kind of hidden in there. And without, you know, spoiling any of them in particular, is there anything else out there people haven't found yet? And can you talk a little bit about sort of your intent in putting those in the game? You know, why you wanted to do that?
I definitely wanted some sort of small little hidden things that surprise you. And it's also a good place to hide sort of broken or OP systems that are still fun to play with. I don't think there's anything that people haven't discovered. We didn't go nuts with it. We found, you know, as much as some people think fondly of the Crystal Ship in FTL, it's just not fun to have something be entirely random. And, you know, obviously we didn't perfectly avoid that, but I love systems like Splunky's chain, you know, to go to the gold place and then eventually in the new game go down to hell or whatever. But I honestly couldn't find a satisfying way to add some sort of chain of events to this game that wouldn't feel frustrating.
We tried to add what we could on a minimal level that would fit the design without trying to force anything.
Yeah, so we mostly just tried to put that energy towards making a wide array of weapons and stuff that you can just normally find in the game and just make the game as wide as possible rather than having sort of hidden depth.
Yeah. Chris, did you have any favorite little bits of writing for the characters or in battles that most players might not see but that you'd like to call out?
Well, without giving any spoilers, I wrote three alien languages for the game, which actually each had their own style guide. So at some point, I think for a secret, it might be fun to release those and see all the background work that led up to the seemingly incomprehensible language in the game. So that was a lot of fun to do. I'd never actually written design your own language. And I'm like, oh my God, I've never done anything like that. It was a really fun process.
Well, we need to wrap it up here in a second, but I did want to touch on modding really quick, which is something you mentioned is feasible in the game. I know it doesn't have Steam Workshop support or anything like that, but what can kind of intrepid modders do for it right now? And have you thought about post-release adding Workshop support or something that's a little more extensible?
I'd always be open to considering it, but again, with such a small team, there's always 1,000 things to do, and everything kind of gets pushed around in terms of where we end up. So I wouldn't make any promises on extending it beyond what it has now. But right now, a lot of the game content is pushed into Lua scripts, which are all open for the player to see if they go into their game directory. And they can make new weapons, new units, new maps, new missions, stuff like the satellite mission with the satellites that take off. It's all defined in scripts. The players could create all sorts of combinations that we didn't think of or didn't.
Yeah, and also some of the pacing in the game.
They could play with the balance and the pacing. Even the AI could be altered, not heavily, but some of the weighting and whatnot could be.
Yeah, there's some stuff you can't change, like the core systems of the game, like the island progression or something like that. It's just it wouldn't be practical.
But the makeup of every island and how the missions are chosen and the resources they give.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have had more, but across 4 years of development, maintaining a system that would be easy to mod as well as easy for us to actually make the game in is difficult. And I had to keep making concessions towards let's just finish this game, which meant keeping it more closed off because it was faster to work that way than having a really robust open-ended system.
Right.
And of course, we didn't actually know what the final game would be like. If we had a clear game design scope that we stuck to and here's what it's going to be at the end, it'd be a lot easier to sort of plan for that. But when things keep changing,
It'd also be super sad to spend all that time worrying about modders and then end up with a game that nobody likes that much. So I would rather worry about modding once we know that players actually want to mod it.
Otherwise, it would have been so moddable.
Yeah.
If only you liked it.
Well, if someone puts Eva unit 1 in the game, Justin, Chris,
I was gonna mod that.
Oh really?
I don't know.
You're thinking about it.
But I was like, I wonder if I could just do pixel art for that. Honestly, well, not. I don't know if you could put this in the mods, but I'd love to have some sort of fuel attachment for a mech that is on the map and could get broken or something like the Avon. Man, that'd be cool.
I've already seen a kind of a mock-up of what a Gundam Zaku would look like in the game, and I was like, that looks extremely good, and if I had any talent, I would do it. Well, guys, thanks for coming in. We need to wrap it up so everybody can get on to their next thing at GDC, but I love Into the Breach. I think a lot of our readers love Into the Breach. I've been seeing people playing it like crazy. So congrats on another great game. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next. Thanks for coming by.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having us.